Blog Talk Radio.
Today's a really great day. I'm your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones, PhD, Georgetown University, and, of course, William and Mary. Before that was the United States Naval Academy in Annapolis. Some people ask where what sort of doctor I am, and, you know, I'm not a medical doctor, so I'd like to kind of, you know, narrow it down a little bit so folks don't think I'm calling myself a doctor of medicine, when actually I earned my PhD at William & Mary. Hey, see, we got Scarlett O here and LFNJ. Don't know what that stands for, but it really does sound good. All right, we have some really good news today. Obamacare was repealed in the House today. The vote was 245 to 189. I sure would like to know who those 189 were. I'm not even sure if it's you know, what the breakdown was. Did we have any Democrats? Did we have any lady from New Jersey? Okay, got it. Okay, my main man, Christy. Oh my goodness, the governor was just too cool. The way he put the smackdown on the senator from New York was just classic. Oh my God! I love that guy is just too much for me. He's just great. He is just great. He said to Chuck Schumer that he should mind his manners over there across the waterway. It was just so cool as he sipped on a bottle of water. It was wonderful. Yeah, him and Rush. You know. I was listening to Rush back when I was a young Marine stationed at Camp Pendleton, California, when he was just on one radio station in Sacramento, California, and then later he branched out. So I've been listening to him since, well, I guess 1987, 88, and I've been listening to him consistently ever since. I have Ditto Head t-shirts. I have Diddlehead mugs. I attended when he used to do the Rush to Excellence tour. I was in the audience whenever I could be. Not stalking the Rush, no, but I really did love his shows. And then when he had the TV show, I watched the TV show as well. And in fact, I am the proud owner of 14 Rush Limbaugh authentic No Boundaries ties. I don't know if you know anything about those, but he had a tie collection that came out called Rush Limbaugh's No Boundaries ties. And I love them too. I really do. And I mean, I love the guy. I'm not just saying that. I mean, he's just great. I met him a couple of times, and he's fantastic. Anyway, I own quite a few of his ties. And then he abruptly stopped manufacturing ties because there were a few manufacturers who were capitalizing on his brand and making knockoff ties. And so he decided to stop making them. And every once in a while, you can find the ties on eBay, because every once in a while, I'll get a few, one or two on eBay. I really do love the colors, and I wear them all the time. Yeah, big fan of Rush. In fact, Rush is good friends with former Marine officers, James Hans and Brian Tulin. Now, Hans and Tulin, strangely enough, were my company commanders in boot camp. I mean, I was in boot camp in 1979, and it just so happens that Rush Limbaugh is friends with the two men who were the commanding officer and executive officer of my company, my boot camp company, Bravo Company, Platoon 1025 was my platoon. I'm trained by Staff Sergeant V.J. Leha and Staff Sergeant Charlotte. I always like to give them a shout out for when I was a young man. But anyway, I just found that to be the world to be so tiny, because when he mentioned them, I'm like, okay, the name sounds familiar. And I went through my platoon book, my series platoon book out of boot camp, and there they were. So the healthcare law has been repealed in the House. It's probably not going to get anywhere in the Senate. However, as I stated, the vote was 245 to 189, and there were three Democrats who voted for repeal, only three. And I found that to be unfortunate. So overturning the law was a major campaign pledge for the Republicans in 2010, in the 2010 elections. And many of the House's nearly 100 new lawmakers ran for Congress saying they would repeal the law that was pushed by Obama and the Democrats. And, I mean, wow, he is so I think you're talking about Rush again. Yeah, Rush I call in every once in a while, and I talk to him, and I had to call in just as another side note. I'm getting off the subject, but I had to call in the Rush show when he mentioned former Marine officer Hans and talk to him about that, because I had been calling in the Rush show since 1988, and listening to his show and not, you know, I have a pretty good rapport with Rush. Although I've never gotten close enough to Rush to actually meet him and shake his hand. The closest I got was when he was on his Rush to Excellence tour, everybody wanted to get. Okay, I'm back. I thought I got cut off. I'm not sure what's going on with the there's some technical issues once again going on with Skype and Blog Talk Radio. These kind of things happen every once in a while, and then I have to. Yeah, it is, and it happened more than once, and happened to at least two or three hosts over the last couple of weeks, Black Conservative, and then a couple of folks in the Black sphere or the Conservative sphere. Whatever that guy's name is. Oh, you know, the guy from the Black Sphere or Conservative Sphere, he was on on Fox at 3 in the morning. I forget the name of the show. It's just escaping me right now. Red Eye, I think that's it. And he was on that show, and I felt so sorry for him because he just seemed like, it seemed to me that he was kind of lost. Like, he didn't really know, you know, it was very last minute, I suppose, and he really didn't know the subject matter, and I kind of felt bad for him. But otherwise, he's a really great guy because he was unable to jump in and answer any of the questions or provide any opinions, and I thought that was unfortunate because he's really a great guy. But anyway, Rush, didn't get close to him. Love him. Talked to him a lot. Calling his show an awful lot. Got all his stuff. I hope you have some of Rush's stuff too, especially from back in the 80s and early 90s. I even have a lot of his cassettes, not the cassettes, the VHS tapes from his Rush to Excellence tours. But anyway, let's get back to the subject. House Speaker John Boehner said the law would add nearly $1.5 trillion to the deficit and stifle the growth of some small businesses, which are required under the law to provide health insurance to employees or face penalties. So a key issue for the Republicans is that the law requires all Americans to have health insurance, and 28 states so far, there was 27 yesterday, but 28 states, a new state was added today, have joined the lawsuit to repeal Obama's health care law, and they're focusing on the demand that everyone carry health insurance or face a penalty. And what's unfortunate is that the penalties, whatever the penalty is not simply not clearly defined. There's no clear definition of what sort of penalty one would pay for not taking health care, which is ominous. Yesterday's show, I focused on one thing I talked about was Equilibrium, the movie Equilibrium, where everyone was forced to conform and be the same. Basically, let me just go ahead and get it up here. It's a really great movie, and I highly recommend it. And its story is in a futuristic world. A strict regime has eliminated war by suppressing emotions, books, art, music. They're all strictly forbidden. And feeling is a crime punishable by death. So cleric John Preston, played by my favorite actor, Christian Bale, is a top-ranking government agent responsible for destroying those who resist the rules. But when he misses a dose of the prosium, a mind-altering drug that hinders emotion, Preston, who has been trained to enforce strict laws of the new regime, suddenly becomes the only person capable of overthrowing it. It is a really great movie. Someone was saying today that eventually you would go to jail. Okay, got it. So there's supposed to be fines and then jail time. But anyway, I thought about the movie Equilibrium. It's one of my favorite movies, and certainly one of my played by my favorite actor, Christian Bale. And the reason I thought about the movie was because of all the hoopla, all the unfortunate goings on in the media regarding the shooting in Arizona, where there was this call for the elimination of language going back and forth, and how emotion and certain verbiage, even certain words, were thought to spark emotions in a person that would cause one to want to lash out and kill or murder other people. And so MSNBC, CBS, ABC, and a lot of the morning shows, of course not Fox News, they were saying that, you know, we should eliminate using certain words in the political discourse. It was a call, once again, for the fairness doctrine, which won't happen with this Congress, thank God. But I thought about it. Where liberals are calling for us to eliminate certain words from our vocabulary or to simply not use certain words. And, of course, the underlining tone was that emotion sparked by radio hosts and conservatives would spark violence, and those sorts of emotions and that and verbiage should be eliminated from being used in public, and in some cases even in private. And so I thought about the movie Equilibrium, and I highly recommend anybody who, you know, kind of thinks that our country's kind of going in a way where we are being desensitized, just watch the movie, because of course there's nothing in the movie that's, you know, that's true. I mean, it's a movie, but it does get one to thinking about where we're headed in the future with being told how we should speak and what we should say and the whole political correctness deal. Man, I have had way too much Starbucks coffee. I wonder if anyone can tell, because I'm just jumping all over the place. I'm over here and over there, and it's the coffee. It's the, you know what? I hate to even say it. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and say it. I'm gonna try to say it as manly as I can, because you know I was a Marine for 30 years. I find myself going through the Starbucks drive-through, and I'm ordering a triple venti white chocolate mocha, and there is just no way to say that manly, in a manly fashion. But I try. I go to the drive-thru and, venti white chocolate mocha. And then, yeah, it just doesn't sound right. So I get it out. And sometimes I'm on the phone, on Bluetooth, and people hear me talk, and the person I'm talking to, you hear me talking, and they're just giggling in the background, laughing. And then they'll ask me, you want whipped cream on that? So I'll say, thank you, and just drive on through. The worst part is when you're standing in a really crowded Starbucks and they ask you very loud, and they're just, you know, the Starbucks is always, there's always beautiful women in there and, you know, guys and stuff, and then they'll say, yeah, you got to. And I can't. So I can't do Arnold. You know, I can do Ronald Reagan, but I can't do Arnold. So I'm in there, and they say, you want whipped cream on that? And she's yelling it across, you know, there's like 30, 40 people. And, yeah, sure, thank you. There's just no manly way to announce any of Starbucks drinks. However, I have had two triple venti white mochas within the last 3 hours. That's a lot, so please forgive me for jumping all over the place, because I've had way too much of that stuff. Okay. Representative John Boehner. He said, let's stop paying on this check before it can destroy more jobs and put us in an even deeper hole. Then let's work together to put in place reforms that lower costs without destroying jobs or bankrupting this government. So apparently Democrats failed in their procedural attempts to send the repeal bill back to the committee for discussion. And then House Republicans were already preparing for four House committees to take the next step in the repeal effort and figure out ways to change the law. It's unclear how they'll be able to do that. I know that you know, Congress controls the purse strings, and so they can simply make fund the law and sort of break it down that way. But it seems to be a concerted effort to engage a two-prong attack on this monstrosity, and that is through Congress defunding it, thus slowing it down a bit, and then states going through the court systems. Two or three more than half of the states in the union are now suing the federal government to repeal this law. And I think, you know, health care and affordable health care is important, and it's a good thing. And it's a good thing in a small way that the government get involved. But when I say that it's a good thing that the government get involved, but only in a way just to try to, you know, to say perhaps, well, you know, perhaps you should try this, perhaps you should try that, but not to get involved where they take over and tell you what you have to do or decide for me what sort of coverage I should have or how I should be covered and all of that, and then force me to have to buy insurance if I don't want it. And the government shouldn't be involved in those sorts of things, but it seems to me that this this regime, as Rush called it, is hell-bent on tell us all what we should do and when we should do it and how we should do it and how we should govern our lives. And I often ask my liberal friends, is this the hope and change you wanted, that you hoped for? I was talking to a good friend of mine a couple of years back, 3 years ago, who simply despised President Bush. And she said that, well, the reason why she didn't like President Bush was because she was afraid that he might at some point become a dictator, that he is enacting policies that border on that of a dictator. I found that to be an interesting take on George Bush. I think perhaps it had something to do with the Homeland Security and all that sort of thing. But I wonder what – I haven't asked her lately what she thinks of all the things that Obama's doing that sort of – that certainly give the impression that that's the road he wants to take. And so now we're very happy that – the repeal has moved through the House, and I think the next step is to send it to the Senate. But Harry Reid says that he won't take it up, but I think he'll be forced to do so. And then there'll be inevitably the move to defund the law, which I think is great. And I mean that's a good thing. And you know, the next thing I want to talk about, because this is all just really, really great news. It really is. I want to talk about Sarah Palin for a moment. It seems that to me that a lot of folks are obsessed with that lady. And I hope that I'm not out of bounds, but a lot of my black friends, because I refuse to, you know, I refuse to use the term African American, because it simply does not make sense to me. I've gone into why I don't, you know, I won't do that. But the ladies seem to really despise that woman. And I just can't figure out why. I mean, they didn't even come up with really good reasons. But nevertheless, the same people who blamed Sarah Palin for the massacre at the Tucson Safeway and then taunted her for her silence were enraged when she responded. I was reading Ann Coulter's column at AnnCoulter.com, and Ann Coulter responded this way in her article. She said, last Tuesday night, before Palin responded, MSNBC's Keith Olbermann mocked Palin's silence throughout his show. He said things like, and why is the ever self-promoting Miss Palin so quiet? It is quiet, isn't it? He said. It's too quiet. The silence is deafening from the great Northwest. So, according to Ann Coulter, it was deemed an admission of guilt that she hadn't spoken about the Tucson shooting or denied the accusations that she had inspired the shooter. according to that moron, Keith Olbermann. Anyway, this day, Palin posted a video response, and Keith immediately attacked her for the worst time political statement ever. It's almost as if the liberals would attack Palin, whatever she did, if she went to the potty or something. No, of course not, Scarlett. I'm not suggesting. But I will suggest that a lot of women that I know, almost all of them, are obsessed with hating her. I mean, obsessed with disliking her to the point of obsession that borders on, you know, somebody needing some medication. I mean, I have heard folks describe Hitler and the devil himself with more glowing terms than Sarah Palin from a lot of folks. I mean, really, come on. Leave the lady alone. Come on. Really. Anyway, so the next day, the New York Daily News columnist, after Palin responded, New York Daily News columnist Michael Daly wrote, with stunning originality, Palin may have the blood of more than some poor caribou on her hands. Now, never mind that we have later discovered that this guy was a nut. He hated Bush. Apparently, according to some of his friends, he didn't listen to talk radio or watch the news much, and he was just a nut. But I suppose that one could one argue that after it came out that the Tucson shooter, Jarrett Longer, was a liberal hothead who hated Christianity, laughed about aborted babies, never listened to talk radio, hated George Bush, and cited Mein Kampf as one of his favorite books to annoy his Jewish mother, why did liberals suspend blaming political rhetoric for 2 days? Then they went right back to blaming conservatives for the shooting, even after the New York Daily News communist. Exactly. I wish I had said that. Oh, my goodness. I wish I had said that. That's pretty good. I never get to say really cool stuff like that. I should have said that myself. Anyway, I didn't. So it seems like Governor Palin can't catch a break, and for some reason, shockingly enough, her poll numbers have dipped just a little bit after her video came out, because some believe that it was ill-timed and that she that they perceived her to be, you know, basically all about her, which I find to be disturbing. So, you know, I noticed a new game in the Blame Street media that the Blame Street media is playing for the last 2 weeks, and it's the same game they played with Sarah Palin. Blame the victim. You know, after a slew of Democrat leaders issued open threats against talk radio, conservative radio hosts rose up to defend themselves, and now the Blame Stream Media, BSM, is deriding those who work in talk radio for inserting themselves into the Tucson massacre story and for having a persecution complex, quote, persecution complex, end quote. And I found that to be exhausting as well. That Freudian. I tell you what, what I don't understand is after we elected this president, Barack Obama, as I've stated in other blog talk radio commentaries, it seems to me that these people have become even more and more brazenly come out of the woodwork, that they simply cannot help themselves. It's like a coming out party, a coming out of socialist and Marxist and communist and all of the really far left weirdos. They feel emboldened by President Barack Obama's election, that it's safe to come out. You know, like roaches, when you turn the light off, they, you know, and then turn the light on and they're all just kind of running around. I mean, I don't have any. I'm not suggesting that I have any, you know, here. I do not. But I've heard that that's what happened. Nevertheless, this week's fashionable new media meme is to deride talk radio hosts for taking the speech squelching threat seriously. For example, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Jay Bookman sneered at the, quote, persecution complex, end quote, of conservative broadcasters who reacted to Politico, Keach, Haney, and others who dismissed concerns about the Democrats' chilling campaign against right-leaning media outlets and knocking conservative talkers' defensive posture. Does that sound familiar? This is the same tactic they used against Sarah Palin all week long. And all those on the right falsely accused of being accessories to the Tucson massacre. Attack, 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 attack. Make no mistake, the hate speech inquisition that we have been witnessing over the last 2 weeks is real. And it's being fought on all fronts. Last week, using the non-radio inspired Tucson massacre as fuel, the National Hispanic Media Coalition called on the FCC to gather evidence for the left's preconceived conclusion that conservative talk radio, quote, hate speech, end quote, caused violence. Wow. And this persecution of talk radio and conservative radio and conservative media goes on, even though, as I stated earlier, it's been proven that this guy had nothing to do with any of that. But it just goes to show you that the left is desperate. They are desperate. They have lost the fight here, or they are losing. I mean, they have been issued a knockout blow with the election, or at least a reeling blow with the election of this Congress, this conservative Congress in November, and they are just desperate for any foothold they can get. Whatever they can get, they're trying to get it right now because they have lost a fight. Yesterday I talked about the now defunct Air America radio network and how they consistently, I think they lasted about 2 years, 2.5 years, and they went bankrupt three times at the very least, and how they had such a hard time finding listeners and sponsors. And they were even on satellite radio for a while, and they had few, if any, listeners, and I was one of them. I listened to the show, you know, as often as I could because I wanted to kind of get an idea of, you know, what they were talking about. You know, because I sometimes like to listen to some of those, you know, weirdos to try to, you know, so I can get a good laugh and have something to talk about later on. But it was just horrible. And there's this horrible, horrible network. They thought they were going to do really well, and they haven't. And so you have Air America, which sucked so bad. It was just awful. With Janine Garofalo and a whole bunch of other liberal loonies. out there on the shows with nobody listening whatsoever. I think I might have more listeners than Air America had on any given day, which is anyway. So here we go with now you have Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, and a host of other conservative shows thriving, millions and millions and millions of listeners every single day. And Air America, you know, they had two people listening, me and a Gravelo's mama was listening to her show on Air America. And maybe her mom probably wasn't even listening to that. So that's where we stand with the left and the media. They are horribly desperate, and they just simply cannot help themselves. And this is all going to continue for quite some time, because with the election of Barack Obama, the left thought that they had, that they'd finally won. They assumed that their agenda would be passed and that from now on we would have our socialist utopia and Obama would make everything equal in everybody's house. That's a quote from the Reverend Al Sharpton. That everything would be equal, that we would not stop until everything is equal in everybody's house. I don't want my house to be equal to anybody else's. You know, I kind of like, you know, my own refrigerator and TVs and, you know, whatever I want, and I don't want everybody else to, you know, I don't want to have what everybody else has. They might have something less than what I got or more, you know. It's crazy talk. And I'm talking crazy because I've had so much coffee. Anyway. The last thing I want to talk about today is a group of young men and women, and some older men and women, so perhaps I shouldn't say young men and women. It's a group called the Oath Keepers. I don't know if anyone's heard of them, but you can go to oathkeepers.org and check out their webpage. The Oath Keepers are guardians of the Republic. And I number myself as one. And about the Oath Keepers, I'm going to go ahead and play a brief video clip of what the Oath Keepers are all about, because I think that the Oath Keepers founder, Stuart Rhoades, can better explain it than I can right now. So I'm going to go ahead and play the clip. Hopefully it won't be too long.
My name is Stuart Rhoades. I'm the founder of Oath Keepers. We all are Americans. We all share a common ground of our Declaration and our Constitution, and in particular our Bill of Rights. That's our common ground. Our mission is simply to use the First Amendment to reach out and remind all active duty military, police, and firefighters of their civic obligation, of their legal duty and responsibilities under Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution. The oath is not a good idea or some tradition that we just do. It's a requirement. It's a legal requirement. So our mission is simply to remind them of that oath, of the fact that it is to the law. The oath is to the highest law of the land. And in this country, the Constitution reigns, not some man or woman. Not an oath to an individual. Now, the founders were dummies. They did this for good reason. Throughout history, the oath was to the king. Because who owned the country? The king owned the country, right? Divine and right kings. So, of course, the oath was to a person. And even in modern times, even after the fall of monarchy, you had an oath to individuals. The oath in Nazi Germany was to the Führer. You know, the oath was there. I swear to obey the Führer and give my life for the Führer. Now, why was that? Because in that country, in Nazi Germany, Hitler's word was law. He opened his mouth, and law emanated. That's what a dictator is. He dictates just by talking. He opens his mouth, he becomes law. He is the law. He is the nation. So the oath is to him. In this country, in sharp contrast, the oath is to no man, to no woman, to no individual. Now, why is that? Because we live under the rule of law, not of men. That's what a republic is. And it's not a democracy. You look in the Constitution, you'll never see the word democracy used anywhere in there.
Okay. That was a good friend of mine, Stuart Rhodes, and he is the founder of the Oath Keepers. And the Oath Keepers is a nonpartisan association of currently serving military and veterans and police officers and firefighters who will fulfill the oath. We swore to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, so help us God. We all took that oath and raised our hand, and I took the oath for the first time when I was 17. I was 3 months into my 17th birthday, and I was a young Marine recruit, and we were required to take the oath just before boarding the buses and to head out to the airport to go on to boot camp. And it states that our oath, as the founder stated, our oath is to the Constitution, not to the politicians. And we will not obey unconstitutional or thus illegal and immoral orders, such as orders to disarm the American people or to replace them under martial law and deprive them of their ancient right to a jury trial. We Oath Keepers have drawn a line in the sand. We will not just follow orders. Our motto, as the founder states in the video, is not on our watch. If you, the American people, are forced to once again fight for your liberty in another American revolution, you won't be alone, and we will stand with you. We, the Oath Keepers. There is at this time a debate within the ranks of the military regarding their oath. Some mistakenly believe that they must follow any order the president issues. But you can rest assured that many others in the military do understand that their loyalty is to the Constitution. And we understand what that means. The mission of the Oath Keepers is to vastly increase our numbers. We are in a battle for the hearts and minds of our own troops. To win that battle, Oath Keepers will use written and video testimony of active duty military veterans, especially combat vets, and peace officers to reach, teach, and inspire our brothers in arms in the military and police to fulfill our oaths and stand as guardians of this great republic. I am reading this from the Oath Keepers webpage, but I'm reading it as if I'm saying it. Why am I doing that? As if it's coming from me. I'm doing that because I actually wrote it for this webpage. So these are my words, these are my ideas, and they're also the ideas of every single Oath Keeper who has joined our group. Now, what we are not is we're not advocating or promoting the overthrow of any government, whether local, state, or national. Excuse me. That needs to be made clear. We want our governments to return to the constitutional republic, which the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution defined and instituted. We are not advocating or promoting violence towards any organization, group, or person. We are determined to keep our oath to support and defend the Constitution. We're not advocating or promoting the removal of any person from his or her elected office. We want all elected persons to live up to their oaths to support and defend the Constitution as it is written, or leave of their own volition. So that needs to be made clear. We're not advocating or promoting that anyone in the judicial branch be removed or replaced. We want the justices in the judicial branch to follow the Constitution as written without interpretation. We're not advocating or promoting any particular form of government other than the constitutional republic which the Declaration of Independence and Constitution defined and instituted. We're not advocating or promoting the rewriting of the Constitution, nor are we asking for an amendment there too. We're insisting on the Constitution being enforced as it is written. So if you are a former military, active duty military, police officer, or firefighter, I highly recommend that you check out our webpage and check out the organization, either the articles, videos, and donate. Do whatever you want. I mean, but check it out. I'm going to go over a brief description. I've said what we would not do and what we're not all about, and I'd like to go over the orders we will not obey. Because here's how this all came about. I'd like to just stop for a minute before I go into the orders we will not obey, and just give you the reason, one of the primary reasons for the Oath Keepers coming into existence. So take a listen, and then perhaps you'll understand.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
A civilian national security force, just as powerful, and just as well-funded as the United States military. For a lot of us, that sent chills. It sent a message. It was brazen. What did he mean by that? Very few news organizations picked up on that. Judge Andrew Napolitano spoke about it numerous times on Fox and on his Fox radio show, his Fox News radio show. But very few news organizations picked up on that. Very few asked why we would need a civilian national security force that is just as well funded and just as powerful and just as well trained as the United States military. Very few people have asked that question since. A couple of congressmen, maybe one or two senators here and there, but so to this day, the matter has simply been allowed to languish and is dropped, but not by a great many of us, former military officers and personnel who take that sort of talk very seriously. When we hear stuff like that, the radar kind of goes up. Because we're familiar with history. We're familiar with Mussolini and Hitler and a lot of other dictators and potentates and despots who needed to have their own secret force, their secret police or their security forces. I'm reminded of Haiti. Baby Doc Duvalier returned to Haiti a few days ago, said he just wanted to help. But Baby Doc and his father, Papa Doc Duvalier, ruled Haiti for so many years using their own civilian national security force called the Tonton Macout, who raped and pillaged and plundered Haiti for years before Papa Doc was deposed, and then later his son was forced to fled to France, taking with him millions upon millions of dollars from the country's treasury. But I'm reminded of secret police of that sort, or, quote, national, civilian national security forces. Yeah, they were nuts. And Baby Doc had the nads to go ahead and return. Of course, promptly he was arrested and questioned. I think he's been released and he's back in his hotel now. But if I were him, I'm glad I'm not, by the way, I'd head on out of town. But and forget about that. I think he thinks that because Haiti's in such a disarray that he can come back and all will be forgiven and forgotten, and he can just run the show again and gather up as much American dollars as he can and, you know, reestablish his reign of terror once again. But when a lot of us former retired military officers heard Barack Obama's statement, some of us watched it live. I immediately got on the phone with some of my former colonels and captains and generals, and when we spoke, I'm a retired colonel. So I got on the phone with a lot of my former Marines, and we talked about it. And we spoke for hours, and eventually we wound up later on that night engaging in a conference call where there were 30 of us on the line, 30, talking, and we were doing it through a conference call, through emails, through we were engaged in conversation well into the early morning about this one segment of Obama's speech where he wanted to establish a civilian national security force. But time's running out, so I want to get back to the Oath Keepers and talk about orders we will not obey. And this was established by the members of this great group of patriots, men and women. First, we will not obey orders to disarm the American people. Two, we will not obey orders to conduct warrantless searches of the American people. Three, we will not obey orders to detain American citizens as, quote, unlawful enemy combatants, or to subject them to military tribunals. Four, we will not obey orders to impose martial law or a state of emergency on a state. Five, we will not obey orders to invade and subjugate any state that asserts its sovereignty. Six, we will not obey any orders to blockade American cities, thus turning them into giant concentration camps. Seven, we will not obey any orders to force American citizens into any form of detention camps under any pretext. Eight, we will not obey orders to assist or support any use of any foreign troops on U.S. soil against the American people to, quote, keep the peace or to maintain control. Nine, we will not obey any orders to confiscate the property of the American people, including food and other essential supplies. 10, and finally, we will not obey any orders which infringe on the rights of the people to free speech, to peaceably assemble, and to petition their government for a redress of grievances. It's important. It's really important that military personnel, police officers, firefighters, and first responders of get involved and take a stand, just in case. And it's unfortunate that a group of us, the Oath Keepers, the keepers of our oath, had to come together this way. And all it took to get us to come together this way was what Barack Obama said in his speech and what we've been hearing through the political grapevine, through our military brethren who are still serving on active duty, to people we know in the Pentagon and the Justice Department who are hearing all sorts of bizarre rumors coming from this administration, some of which I can't repeat right now because I don't have absolute proof, and I'm not one to engage in conspiracies or conspiracy theories and all that, although it does kind of sound that way at times. But to me, doing so, doing things of that nature would, you know, would be irresponsible and almost childish. I highly recommend checking out the Oath Keepers webpage and seeing what they're all about. We're not a bunch of kooks and weirdos and conspiracy folks. We're not on par with those paramilitary organizations that hang out in the woods and, you know, wear their camouflage uniforms and, you know, a bunch of, you know, weirdos hoping to overthrow the government and all that. We're just, you know, normal people, former military personnel, who believe that we have to band together to keep the faith and adhere to the Constitution of the United States, just in case. And there are a lot of good men and women of all political persuasions, not just conservatives. There are liberals and who are part of our group, and there are also conservatives and middle of the road folks. And our one common bond is that we love the United States of America, and we love what it stands for. And we want to see it continue. And hearing things like we have to have a civilian national security force, it just sends up some red flags. And with a few other things that are going on, it's just really bothersome to me. And I hope that it's bothersome to you too. That clip of Obama saying those, making that pronouncement can be found in YouTube. And even Rahm Emanuel is quoted as suggesting that there be a service that citizens would be required to participate in a national security or civilian national security force. So it's not just coming from one line in Barack Obama's speeches, but Rahm Emanuel's involved in this, and there's even a Obama Youth Brigade, and they have uniforms, and it's just really, really bizarre. And so if you look into these things and you just kind of do your homework, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I recommend that, just do your homework on the Oath Keepers and stuff I'm talking about so that you have an idea for yourself. And now that time's running out, I got to go, got to get out of here. I really thank you for listening, LFNJ, lady from New Jersey. And anybody else and all the other people who have downloaded listened to my show on Blog Talk Radio. It seems like I get so many downloads and listens when I'm talking about stuff like this. So time's running out. Had too much coffee, probably be up all night. Thank you for listening. I really do appreciate it. And hopefully we'll meet again tomorrow. Have a great night. Thank you so much. And I will I'll see you tomorrow. All right. Hopefully we'll have some really interesting stuff to talk about then. All right. Good night. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Dr. C. Robert Jones, Blog Talk Radio.